Movie Mavericks,
the Movie Mavericks podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks,
the Movie Mavericks podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everyone. Welcome to episode 257 of the Movie Mavericks podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. I'm sitting over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us. It's a long show. We got to go really fast. Okay, go fast.
Yep. Yeah, and if you don't know how we do this, we do it like this. Box Office Ace Predictions, The Pyramid, and News. The Stand is going to be broken into four movies. Sony gets hacked. Fury and Annie are released online early. And the Highlander producers want Tom Cruise in the role that Sean Connery originated in the originals. That fast. Reviews for Sin City, Grumpy's Cats, Worst Christmas Ever, St. Vincent, Earth to Echo, The White Buffalo, Automania, and trailers. Of course, we'll be talking about that Star Wars trailer that dropped earlier this week, as long as we don't get into the minutia, because I'm tired of minutia Star Wars stuff already. And Jurassic World, Strange Magic, Cinderella, The Captive, Cake, Unfinished Business, Pitch Perfect, Pan, and American Heist. I told you it's a big show exploding. We are bursting at the seams today. So let's get into the box office ace prediction game.
It's not a question of enough, pal. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses.
Let's play the HSX.com box office prediction game.
I guess we can go over, last weekend real quick as well. With Hunger Games bowing quite a bit less than either of us expected.
You thought I was foolish on the low end of 137 there, and that proved.
And you still were foolish, somehow, right? That's nuts. Yes, that's crazy.
And this last weekend, it really didn't rebound all that strongly. I mean, $85 million over the 5-day weekend is nothing to blink at in first place, but at the same time, it is a far cry from that $110 million that the last one did.
Yeah. So, what are the chances? My thing now is, what are the chances this surpasses Guardians of the Galaxy? Now,
it has a rough run. $300 million does seem assured, but $330 to $350 is looking like
what's possible.
Might be a high
bar. You know, it's hard to gauge at this point, because right now it's like $50 million ahead at this stage in the game. 10 days in. As straight comparison, but you know, completely different times of the year, so the legs on this are probably going to wear off way quicker.
This, from what I'm hearing, people's main complaint is that there is no Hunger Game in this movie. I know you said that's part of the whole storyline.
There wouldn't be. But they broke this into two parts. See, so the Hunger Games part of this, of the third book, takes place. All the Hunger Games kind of take place in the last half of the book, so there really wouldn't be a Hunger Games part to this. So maybe a mistake to break it up.
Not financially, but as far as fans go, yes. Hopefully they didn't alienate their audience with this.
Let's talk about this week. Talk about financially. We got two financial disasters. For DreamWorks, which is just this is bad. This is all bad for them.
Stunning.
They've can't sell, apparently. You know, no one wants to buy them. Katzenberg's overpricing them by like $1 billion. I think they're worth $2 billion. He wants $3 billion for them. With this, now people were assured this was going to be hit. Analysts were saying $160 million this would earn domestically, which it has no shot at now. It'll be, you know, lucky to hit $100 million.
This is as big, if not a bigger debacle than Rise of the Guardians a couple years ago, which is
we should say $36 million over the 5 days here, which is just disastrous. I had said, I believe 55, and you had went even higher than me on that.
I said 62.
Yeah, which wouldn't be out of the question, and should be what these kids movies should be earning to be hits. And as I said, everyone was thinking this, so this has to be a big letdown across the board.
I think anyone
came close to this on either this or Horror Bosses 2 on the site.
Horror Bosses 2. Is really the one that is surprising to me, because I thought Penguins had a chance because there was some direct competition with Big Hero 6, which is playing strongly still and has great word of mouth.
Apparently no competition.
Dumb and Dumber 2 is not playing as strongly, and the word of mouth isn't as great, but that isn't affecting Horrible Bosses as much as just a lack of interest, it looks like, at this point. I mean, this is a very, very low opening.
Yeah, wow, $23 million for the 5-day. I mean, just crushes it, but it does lead. I don't know, for comedies you do get more one-offs than you do get sequels, right? Wouldn't you agree? Kind of. I don't know, they don't necessitate sequels as well as something like action movies or big, more blockbustery type movies like animation or whatnot.
Yeah, the 22 Jump Street or Hangover 2 is the rarity. It's not, you know, it's not the, it's the exception and not the rule. Whereas, like you said, it doesn't lend itself like an action
film.
Well,
it would be weird to, like they, like Neighbors did well, but it would be weird to see like a Neighbors 2, right? It's kind of unwarranted and very unnecessary. And while the horrible bosses thing, I think, plays well to sequels in a way, but it kind of goes back to that whole bad Santa, bad teacher thing we were at, and Horrible Bosses fits into that, even though bad's not in the title, where it's better to spin that idea off into a different area.
It's just kind of a, it's astonishing to me that this movie, I thought this whole year was going to be the year of the comedies, and it turned out that most of them have been just utterly dreadful. So I'm totally,
I think this looks, I haven't seen, I think it looks funny though. I laugh at the trailers and TV spots, so.
Yeah, I did that with A Million Ways to Die in the West, too, and that didn't turn out too well.
Yeah, that's true. Well, fair enough. All right. Well,
our lone release this week, The Pyramid, is a low-budget horror film, and only releasing in 550 theaters. This is a very modest release, to say the least, and shouldn't make much of a dent in the box office. This is kind of a lark here, I guess, for our predictions. Do you have a prediction for this? Have you,
yeah,
you conjured up
yes, a prediction?
Yes, I did. All right, well, what do you got on this? What's your game?
I am going to say, before we put this out there, I should say the HSX bar is at 5 million, which I think is way high.
Yeah, that would be like a $10,000 screen average for this.
I am going to, however, put this at 1.5.
Okay. So you think people are going to actually see this thing? Have you seen a trailer?
A little bit. I have. And it looks like something that I think people would go out and see. Horror. I don't know.
It's funny because it's something I would see, but I wouldn't go out and see it if it was brought to me, like on television or something. I would see it if it was on demand or something like that. I mean, this looks like ripe for video on demand. You know, I don't know why this isn't a simultaneous release like they've been doing, but I'm going to go 625,000. So I think this, wow, you know, makes barely over half a million for the weekend. I don't think it makes in its whole run what you just predicted for its opening weekend, but I could be wrong. I've been wrong on some of these small releases this year.
We should see. It's rough.
It's a rough one. This is really just out of the way for next weekend when a couple more wide Oscar hopefuls and big box office contenders are released. Let's move on to the news section because we got some things to go over today. Namely, that The Stand, which has been a troubled production at Warner Brothers for years. They did a great miniseries in 94, and they've been trying to get this off the ground. It is now being planned as a four-part film. This fits into Warner Brothers' current trend of sequelizing and creating these universes. But
yeah, they're really...
I feel like this is kind of hedging your bet. Just, you know, when did we were away from just making one good movie and that necessitating a sequel, as opposed to these preordained?
No, we don't do that anymore.
We're looking at serials. Like, we're back in the 1950s here with the serials.
But people want unbelievable. It. People seem to want it, so I don't blame them for doing it. Although The Stand seems an odd one to do it with, doesn't it? It feels like, you know, the third and fourth movie of The Stand, are people going to come back? This is a long story, for starters. It's not a bad story. It's a very good one. But in a book form, it really worked, I thought. As a miniseries, I think it works because it doesn't necessitate any really huge budget. But yeah, at least in the comfort of your home, having it delivered to you, as you said, with The Pyramid, you know, it's easier to take that in. But to go out four separate times to watch The Stand? I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like a monumentous undertaking.
They better make it real good.
This would be the kind of film that would need this, because this project is troublesome for the fact that it cannot be made into a two-hour film or even a three-hour film. This is a huge, sprawling story, so
well,
it needs that canvas.
They're playing it a bit different. If you look at like the Kirk Cameron and recently the Nicolas Cage thing that didn't do well, but the Left Behind series stuff, you know, that kind of makes sense. And that's very similar to The Stand. And they made, three movies off that. But they had, you know, the church behind them, so to speak. This isn't going to have that.
Now, this is going to be a big release, you know. I mean, and it's got to imagine huge, this was over a period of at least 4 years, if not, you know, 6 to 8, with the way things are released and marketed and shot. So the sustained interest needs to be there, and it's very hard to imagine that it will be, like you said, over that length of time.
Well, Warner Brothers has been a holdout a little bit for doing this kind of stuff, but with Disney doing so well, they have to compete. I mean, they are the biggest studio, really. No.
Well, we'll see if this actually happens as well. Remember, they tried to do the Dark Towers and the Gunslinger deal with Stephen King.
The Dark Towers.
The Dark Towers. Okay, yeah. Or, I thought it was something like that.
Yeah.
The Dawn of the Towers. It ain't the Lord of the Rings one. Let's Mickey move on Rourke. And talk about Sony.
No, let's talk about Mickey Rourke. Let's just
I wanted to talk. I wanted to talk about this last week, but Trevor was under the weather. We didn't get a chance to get on the air, but. I was going to say Mickey Rourke was returning to the boxing ring in Russia over the weekend. And anyone that has a YouTube account can look at his...
An account. You don't need an account.
You really don't need an account, unless you're looking at some crazy shit on there. But Rourke boxed in Russia on the undercard of the Provotnikin fight. It was an exhibition, which means they use a little bit bigger gloves. But it really was a fucking circus. I mean, this was...
You weren't excited and enthralled?
Did you see the fight?
I'm fairly certain I could beat both of those guys at the same time.
What's sad about it was bad. I think he hit him. I think he hit him in the sciatic nerve and dropped him with like a Charlie horse. I'm not sure it was even a legal punch he dropped. I don't know. The guy who he fought.
I didn't watch very much of it, but I did see him the other guy go down.
12 professional fights for the opponent, one win. Rourke resumes his career after 30 something years here. He's got a good record though. Career. You know, I'll give him this. Manny Pacquiao's famous trainer, Freddie Roach, his first job was training Mickey Rourke at the Wild Card Gym back in the early 90s. That's a little bit of history for those that are, you know, on the Wild Card team now. But Rourke he was actually a decent boxer. He was 47-3 in the amateurs.
Yeah, he had a career. And his pro record was pretty good, too.
Yeah, he fought a couple of, you know, tomato cans in there, but he could fight. It wasn't
I think most people have. You're not gonna.
What's scary is his face after the fight in the. Yeah, he's lost so much weight. He's basically off the juice because they had to test him and whatnot. So he's lost 33 pounds and he's in great shape for a 62-year-old. Let's make no, you know, fun of that. But at the same time, man, he is just he looks just like Marv, like in real life. Now. You know, it's gotten to be where he's imitating his character, and I hate to say that because he'll beat my ass, but. Mickey, for your own good. He says he wants to fight 4 more times in the next year. His next fight's in March in Russia. So hopefully he picks somebody that at least has a 500 record.
I don't know. He didn't look very good in the ring.
He's 62 years old, my friend. I mean, he shouldn't
But
be
that's what I'm saying. Ring. He shouldn't be doing it anyways. But against that guy, it was okay. That guy fought like a 62-year-old.
That guy was 29, and he fought and his opponent, and he went to Russia
pretty
and lay
weak.
Down.
Yeah, pretty weak fighting. I don't know. I'd be worried about Mickey Rourke going up against anyone really big.
I just think he's squandering all of his goodwill that he rebuilt after The Wrestler. You know, the Oscar nomination. It seems so far away now, once again. I feel like we're back in 1997 version of Mickey Rourke. Speaking of boxing, let's talk about super middleweight champion Andre Ward, who has been sidelined with promotional issues for over a year now. This is a Bay Area-born fighter. Our last boxer to win gold in the Olympics back in 2004 in Athens. He has been cast as some sort of villain role in the new film Creed, which is the Rocky spinoff, slated to go before cameras in January. I'm stoked about this. I never thought we'd get so many extra Rocky movies, you know, post 1990.
spinoffs
now. This is a great idea. I'm actually for this idea. I like Michael B. Jordan. I like Ryan Coogler from what I've seen at Fruitvale Station. This is a Bay Area kid. This seems to be a passion
Michael
project
B. Jordan
to his.
He's going to play Creed.
Correct, yeah.
Right,
and
that's
so,
right. I forgot.
I'm looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to this
Well,
project.
He's got to beef up quite a bit then.
You know, they can do anything now. Did you see that picture of Jake Gyllenhaal in Southpaw?
Yeah, I know. Good Lord. Yeah, but Jake Gyllenhaal has been known to go. He's like a Christian Bale. You know, they can go up and down like
right.
crazy.
For Prince of Persia,
I don't know if everyone can do that, obviously. Tom Hanks says it's a young man's game, you know, and I believe it.
Yeah, well, ask Russell Crowe how that affected him.
Yeah, exactly. So But I just, he's got to be, I mean, we're talking, you know, back in the 80s, you know, men were, they were big, right? They were huge. These guys are huge.
That was a bodybuilding era. You know, that is a whole different type of screen character.
Exactly. Too, that's what I'm saying. So how are they going to, do you think they're going to keep that in here, or do you think they're going to let them,
they might make him a light heavyweight or a middleweight. You never know if it's even a heavyweight type situation. I'm sure they'll make the guy look the training regimen. If you're in a movie, a Rocky movie, Stallone's got you on some sort of regimen. And
I don't know. I like my men ripped.
Oh, that's good to know. I will submit that to Muscle Growth. We'll let him know over there.
Let him know. Let him know.
Speaking of ripped, your boy Chris Pratt is continuing to stay in shape, and he has lined himself up with a new project, Cowboy Ninja Viking, based on a graphic novel of the same name. It apparently is going to be about a cowboy ninja Viking. Why did he turn down the Uncharted movie to take on this project? Is this a little Ryan Reynolds-esque, is it, I'm feeling here?
Maybe. I mean, this may be in line. I don't know. Maybe his thinking is to try to stay in that Guardians of the Galaxy area.
I'm not as sold on this guy as you are. You know what I mean? I know you like this guy a lot, right?
Well, exactly. Have you seen Guardians of the Galaxy?
I haven't yet, no.
You haven't yet. Watch it before you sold on him or not. He's a really good actor. But I think most people, like me, know him from comedy and stuff, and which I think he's hilarious in, but it doesn't give you a good idea of what he's like, you know, as what could be like as a star. And I think he anchors Guardians of the Galaxy really well, and yeah, he's got star quality.
He's a leading man. Okay. Well, we'll talk about him later in that Jurassic World trailer, but he's going to be headlining this project and is going to possibly roll early next year. All these things are coming together so quickly all of a sudden. I feel like their projects are less in development than they used to be.
Yeah. You feel like that? No, they yeah, you're right. In this time of the internet, project, you get to know everything. Well, speaking of what, huh?
This project that's been in development hell is the Sony picture of Steve Jobs, you know, that Aaron Sorkin film.
You think it's because of the other one?
I think it's because it's had its star lost two times. I mean, you had DiCaprio exit, Bale exit, Fassbender exit. It's been a revolving door for directors, actors. And now Sony just said, screw it, we're dropping the project. And you got to think something that has that kind of Oscar pedigree, or there's a problem somewhere in there, whether it be the script, whether it be Sorkin's overbearing influence on it, because it's become Aaron Sorkin's Steve Jobs movie. Why doesn't Sorkin just direct the damn thing then at this point? But Universal smells a hit. They picked up the rights to acquire it and release it. So it does have life still at this point.
Well, it could be a huge hit. I mean, Steve Jobs he's an iconic guy. You know, it could get people out there. This could easily be, you know, one of those $100 million plus earners in the awards corridor.
Yeah, I agree. This is Social Network written all over it. I mean, for obvious reasons and for unobvious reasons. I mean, it has that kind of feel. And so that's what it makes you wonder why Sony would not want this in their, you know, in their library of catalog titles. There's something really wrong with this project, though, that all this talent cannot find a way to gel on it, you know, because even things that are half baked go before.
Well, where's the script? When does this get rolling at all? It feels like there was never a plan at Sony, really, to be honest with you. And maybe Sony was the problem there. So maybe this will, maybe they'll push the gas at Universal a little more and it'll actually get going.
This has been in development since early 2013, since the time that the Ashton Kutcher film.
Yeah, I know. We've one movie has come and gone. It's faded into the past, you know.
Yeah, we're still awaiting this one. Can we have it, please? Thank you.
Yes.
And our boys, Sony's, are having a tough week. They got hacked this week, if you didn't know. Sony Pictures corporate emails all went down. Their website went down.
Was it on Monday or something, right?
It was on Monday, and Fury and Annie were released online over the weekend, and some were saying
unrelated.
In direct connection.
Oh,
they were saying in direct. I've heard in direct connection. Have you heard the theory that it's North Korea as well? That they're pissed off about.
Yeah, I know. They don't have any proof of that.
That's all totally unsubstantiated. I know, but I love that theory because the interview wasn't one of the films that was leaked online.
all the things they gave him a deadline for the things that you've done. This and that. So nobody knows what's going on. They gave him a deadline. Deadline passed was Monday, I think at 3 Pacific time was the deadline. And it passed. Nothing happened. There's apparently proof that they've stolen stuff. Obviously, they've hacked in because they shut down all their Eastern United States stuff. The Los Angeles stuff, I don't know if they got to, but they turned. I had to turn off all the computers. And so what is going on? Nobody knows. It doesn't even make sense. And then these, four movies get released, but they're screeners, right? They're like award screeners.
Academy Award screeners, yeah. Which isn't uncommon so for those to they appear online doesn't early.
Necessarily have, yeah, there's no, I don't see necessarily a connection. Because it's not like anyone could have gotten those, right? If they were out available as screeners. Which they should be. It's December 1st as we record this. So, yes, those should absolutely be in people's hands right now.
Yeah, Academy members should have those. You're right. There is no direct correlation, just like the North Korea connection is just a rumor. But it has been a tough week for Sony for the fact that these things are online. This is going on. They're shut down at this point. Things are underperforming.
The studio shut down. I think all of Sony shut down. They're just, what can they do without computers, right?
Yeah, you are in limbo.
I am dying to see what this was all about when they get done with their investigation. I'm sure they're going to be tight-lipped until and maybe even after. But I really hope that they do release their findings.
Well, as an asterisk on a previous story that we had reported on back in the summer when The Expendables 3 leaked online, Lionsgate did, in connection with London police, arrest two men last week that were responsible, they say, for uploading the film. I don't know if they stole it as well, but they did upload it. So they got two guys, and that is going to be a lengthy prison and probably a sentence and probably a very expensive fine. I mean, the guys who uploaded the Scarlett Johansson or hacked her phone got 10 years for that. So, I mean,
yeah.
That wasn't even a movie. I think the guy who uploaded the Wolverine back in 2008 is still in prison. So... note to self, don't ever upload anything.
For good, being good. You have to admit, the Sony stuff, you got to give them credit for the way they hacked it. I mean, it was like in a movie, you know, having that stuff come up on the Sony's people's screens and stuff, the scroll and crossbones type thing. And then
it's like out of the demands of things.
It was like a movie. It was awesome.
It's this shit. We need Steven Seagal right now to take care of this shit.
I just feel like this Jurassic Park and little Newman pops up.
Right. Yeah. Fucking Newman. Oh, I love it. Well, since we're talking about old school stuff here, the Highlander series back from the 80s and 90s, and I guess it even continued on to 2000, dragged its ass into that new generation. They're trying to reboot this now for a long time. Speaking of developmental hell, Justin Lin was attached at one point. Ryan Reynolds was attached. People have come and gone. But now the Highlander producers want to get highbrow, and they have set their sights on casting Tom Cruise in a glorified cameo role as the elder Highlander in the role that Sean Connery played in the first few.
You mean the Spaniard?
The Spaniard, the Scottish Spaniard.
I'm a Spaniard.
Kind of an interesting... I like that. It's like the dragon. I am the last man. I am the last dragon. So it's kind of an interesting idea because I like the idea that Cruise could kind of pop up in these offbeat movies or these movies that aren't his to anchor. But this also seems kind of like a pipe dream in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he would ever agree to do this. I actually, it would probably be a bad move if he did.
Depending on the level of a movie it turns out to be. But at the same time, he's got
the
skill with the sword. I mean, he's got the skill with the sword. It wouldn't hurt, I don't think, his career all that much if he took like a kind of a self-deprecating... It almost feels to me like a jokey version of his Les Grossman role, but just kind of just more jokey, you know?
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if it's a good idea, man. I bet he passes.
Yeah, I'm going to respectfully pass on that, guys. Thanks. Just want to thank you, though, for thinking of me. What's going on with the Shooting Clerks, this Kevin Smith biopic?
It's a biopic about Clerks and the shooting of it, hence Shooting Clerks. Making of Clerks. So I really want to see this as a Kevin Smith fan. I think this is a great idea. And they've got Kevin Smith involved now. They got Brian O'Halloran involved. I guess they're going to be in it. I'm guessing, no cameos. But he was on Facebook the other day, and apparently he's gotten a little bit of shit about being involved in this, and something to the way of if you hear any news about Kevin Smith or anything, he's got like his hand in it. If there's a movie Kevin Smith, he's got his hand in it. And there's a little bit of blowback from him on that, and I think that I don't get it myself. Wouldn't you want Kevin Smith to be in this? I mean, the Stephen Hawking movie comes out and Stephen Hawking gives his blessing to it. And I think, okay, that's good. So wouldn't you want Kevin Smith's blessing on this?
Yeah, it would be like if George Lucas blessed the Fanboy movie. You know, they would love that back in the, you know, when that came out. But
yeah,
that,
well, that to me even says, yeah, definitely want to see this now because they've had contact enough that he's right in the movie. I can actually feel like, okay, this has a stamp of approval from the dude that it's about.
Correct.
It's like,
yeah,
okay, that makes me want to see it even more in that sense. So I really don't understand why anyone would be giving him any shit on that. And
especially when you have things like this Aaliyah Lifetime movie, who her whole family is against, all her friends and family are against. Yeah. Everyone's like protesting it, and you finally get one that comes out and someone's like, "Yeah, I'm with this. This is a great idea." I didn't even think about doing it. I mean, he should have thought about doing this. To be honest with you, he probably is kicking himself in the ass for not doing this. But good idea.
Poor son of a bitch just gets so much shit, And it is because he's so involved in everything, and he does have a hand in everything, and he's become a caricature of himself. But at the same time, like, fuck, this is a great idea. I really want to see this.
Yeah, I think this is a good idea, too. And Shooting Clerks, it is most likely going to be an indie product. Was this a Kickstarter funded? Do you know?
It was Indiegogo funded a tad. Apparently, they already had funding in line for that. And they only needed, like, $3,000 or something. So it wasn't a huge amount that they made off the funding. But I don't know. It seems I read the Indiegogo thing and I didn't quite understand it. And I think maybe some of the complaining may have been that these guys have done some short movies I haven't seen yet about short biopic things about Kevin Smith. It's weird. And somehow they were invited last year in 2013 to be a part of Smodcast channel, to be a channel on there. So I don't know if the complaining is maybe it has, in fact, in some way, egged on his own biopic, which does sound a little weird, maybe, at that point. Because if Steve Jobs was alive today, wouldn't it be weird to have Steve Jobs be like, you know what, I would like a Steve Jobs.
I'm hiring writers to make a movie about me. Yeah.
Make the movie about me. So maybe they have something there, but none of that was included in the complaint, as far as I could understand. So I don't know.
And people complain. It's the internet. People bitch about anything. Let's not forget.
Yeah, I complain on the podcast.
Well, let's take a break here. Let's do some advertising, and we'll get back with reviews of upcoming movies.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAM Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Check out the Blueprint Review podcast at blueprintreview.co.uk.
This could be interesting because I know we've got some very diverse people. I'm going to be arguing with Darren a lot.
Like, I think it's going to be me v you lot, with maybe Laura in the middle.
To be honest, I think it's about expectation. Yeah. Like, I think...
Yeah, I expected it to
be right, Governor?
Yeah.
I feel like we'd be a lot more intellectual sounding if we talked like that.
I thought that trailer was going to be far more sophisticated when he first spoke and everything, and then I don't really know what that was.
Now, Gav.
But check it
all
out.
All right.
Blueprint.
Reviews. We've got a lot of things to talk about today. Woof.
Oh, okay, let's go through it. Talk about your grumpy cat thing real quick. Get out of the way.
I got a grumpy cat, all right. She's all grumpy.
You grumpy puss.
Exactly. Shit. Never get a grumpy puss. It'll ruin your day. Grumpy Cat's worst nightmare. Christmas ever. Worst nightmare. Goodness, it was a nightmare. No, it was actually a pleasant little lifetime based on the popular internet of that grumpy-looking cat that has that syndrome that makes it look like it's pissed off all day. This was voiced by Aubrey Plaza, who I don't really care for, but was pretty funny. This is a sardonic little thing. This was written and directed by Tim Hill and Jeff Morris, guys who did Hop and SpongeBob SquarePants. And briefly, it's pretty self-deprecating and knowledgeable, winks at itself. It's Home Alone, Beethoven, and Look Who's Talking all rolled up into one very cheap and kind of amusing concoction, to be honest with you. I endorse this movie. I liked it. I thought it was pretty entertaining.
So what you're saying is you like Lifetime movies.
I liked this Lifetime movie, my friend. Or I'm just saying I like a grumpy cat once in a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah, grumpy puss.
Can I get a best Christmas ever?
Grumpy puss. All right, I'll do Earth to Echo real quick. Earth to Echo. It's for kids. That's it. It really,
really?
Is. If you're not, you know, if you're 10, like maybe 8 to 12 in that range, pretty good movie. If you're any older, my God, is this for kids?
Is it? But is it for kids in the way that Flight of the Navigator and Ruskies?
It is
and,
for
and
kids
kind of
in
stuff?
The way that Disney Channel is for kids.
Oh,
it's bad. It's woefully bad. It reminds me, if you've ever tried to return to your youth and watch things like Saved by the Bell, shit like that, like it's not written for adults. It is written for children. Yeah.
Well, that kind of explains why it did well, but not as well.
Rough to watch for an adult. Yeah.
But if for kids, though, you recommend it for children.
If you have a little boy, no. You know, it's the problem really is the dialogue and the story and things. They just don't – they're just not for adults. You know, it's just really – it's so – and it's worse than, you know, basic stuff. It's really – like I say, Disney Channel – I don't even know if it's necessarily, I don't really know what's on that at this point, but it's for kids, you know, when we watch Nickelodeon, if you were, when you were a kid, it's, stuff like that.
Well, how's the special effects?
But worse. They're fine.
And it's a,
not
it's
super
a handheld,
expensive, but
found
it is
film.
It is a found footage thing, which is unnecessary. And I'm tired of these, especially when they don't. It's completely unnecessarily found footage, but it is, and they break from it, which makes it even worse. You know, at times you see through the robot's eyes, which, how did they get that footage? You tell me, I don't know. I don't know. It's really freaking, like, they find the robot thing, and essentially the first, you know, three quarters of the movie is them on their phones. It gives them a map, and they have to go along the map and pick up the pieces for the robot. They're like, ooh.
Yeah. Robot. I think I'll be skipping. Hey Earth to
they're
Trevor. Like, something's moving.
Like, my friends are moving and I'm very upset.
Like, hey, okay, you guys.
Get the
let's
out.
Go to the antithesis and talk about Sin City 2, which is for adults only. I mean, this is nothing kid about this.
I think it's for 8-year olds and less, personally. Actually, a 2-year old would probably very much enjoy this.
I did not enjoy this movie. I gave this 2 stars. I was
That's
very
crazy.
Let down. And to precede this, I had watched part one in the night before leading up to this because I wanted to refresh up on it. And the difference between one and two, even though aesthetically they're very, you know, almost identical, and there are some beautiful images in Sin City 2 and some scenes that work,
it still looks
individually,
good.
But at the same time, the difference in the two is startling. I mean, Sin City 2 has major problems. And I think the biggest problem is that there's not a likable character in this movie. I really didn't care about anything that was happening the whole time.
I think
it was an exercise.
The bigger, I mean, you're right about that. In the first one, even minor characters, I got into those characters. Even when they were on screen for a second, I thought, oh man, these good. And it didn't help, you know, swapping out actors. Didn't help
Correct,
me one
yeah.
bit at all. You know, and the stories this time around just weren't worth it.
They didn't need to
they
be told.
Just
Even the strongest story, in my opinion, was the Joseph Gordon-Levitt segment, the gambler story.
And it went nowhere.
And I thought, you know, Eva Green was absolutely gorgeous and very, very well cast, I thought, in as the dame to kill for. But even that segment had no real point to it. And poor Jessica Alba, who is just, you know, absolute gorgeous screen presence and such an innocent figure in that first one. I mean, you understand why Bruce Willis wants to protect
her. She works in the first
whole idea.
One. She does not work in this one.
She turns into Travis Bickle, and by the end of it, I'm thinking, what are you doing?
There were moments when she was there. First of all, there were a lot of moments in this that didn't happen in the first one. First of all, I don't know that that Rodriguez directed this as much as he did the first one. I feel like this was a little bit pushed over onto Frank Miller's
Frank
side
Miller there?
A little bit more than the other one. Yeah, because a lot of this reminded me of Spirit. And there was just bad acting as far as sets and stuff goes. There were several things with Jessica Alba where she was walking or doing something, and I thought, God, it really looks like she's pretending.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
about.
There
was
one part where she over
a lot of it.
A lot of it's overcooked, but at the same time, that worked in the first one. Peter Travers of the Rolling Stones had a great
because
quote
the first
on this movie.
One.
He said it was like running into an ex-love and realizing that the flame is gone. You know, and it's kind of like that. You look at this and you go,
I disagree in the sense that, I mean, what that says is that you don't want to see a sequel to this, and that's bullshit. I do want to see a sequel to this, but I want to see a sequel that has as much attention paid to it as the original. And when you look at the original, I believe was a far more of a Rodriguez thing, but you also had a segment directed by Tarantino. You know, you had real directors working there. This felt phoned in. And it just, I didn't feel Rodriguez in this. I don't really know. I don't know. It reminded me a lot of the Spirit, the directorial style. Well, I mean, that might be crazy. I might be wrong, but it wasn't good.
This and Machete Kills both didn't do well, but I say
Machete Kills
is
awesome,
is a far better film than this. And I know people
both of the Machete movies are fucking awesome.
Are better than this. Sin City 2. Sin City 2 is a huge letdown. And that's why we're talking about it so vehemently, because of the fact that we both like that first one so much. And this one is such a fall
from
grace.
Yeah, I love the first one. First one's great.
Really
watch.
Unnecessary.
You could really watch it a couple times. You know, there's so, and the interweaving of the stories in the first one I thought was done so much better than this. This one felt like, I don't know, like the world didn't feel as big this time. It didn't feel as big.
The only reason to see Sin City 2 is for Eva Green's breast, Jessica Alba's midriff, and Powers Booth's performance. That's pretty much my.
I thought you were going to say Powers Booth's balls.
No, but I missed that. Was that a deleted scene? Did you get the extended edition?
Yeah,
you did.
Yes. The one cool thing about this is they do still have the special feature on this, which is the green screen version of the movie.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Which is neat to watch. Cool. I watched a little bit of that, and that's neat to watch, that kind of shit, you know?
But this is not as groundbreaking, obviously, as it once was, and the story just isn't there this time out.
But that's fine, right?
Well, let me talk briefly about St. Vincent. Oh. This is the Bill Murray film. Melissa McCarthy and Naomi Watts are in this. I did not want to see this movie. I thought I had, you know, I thought Bill Murray had used up all of his tricks, but it kind of, you know, it was brought to me, you know, let's put it like that. And at the same time,
I did not want to watch this with someone Clockwork Oranged me into it.
You know what I mean? It was like that. But I actually fell in love with this movie. I really liked St. Vincent. Bill Murray once again pulled it off, and this movie is predictable from the jump, but there are performances in this, and Melissa McCarthy, who I've never liked in her comedic roles. I think
like
she plays everything. Was really good in this, a subdued role. Naomi Watts was good in this. It's got problems, I'll say that. I mean, there are a lot of loose ends dangling, especially with the Terrence Howard character. But at the same time, something about this movie, I got into
the
relationship
between.
It's Murray is a cankerous neighbor to McCarthy and her young boy. A minor accident causes McCarthy to be in debt to Murray. He decides that he'll watch her precocious little kid for afternoons while she's working at the hospital in payment, and they strike up a friendship. The kid's kind of a nerdy, getting picked on.
That sounds excellent, actually.
Yeah, it really is. It turns out to be just as good as you think it was, and it's Murray does that, you know, that verbal linguistics thing where he is. Even though he looks like he's the dumbest one in the room, he's actually the wittiest one in the room, you know. And it's the things he is saying are extremely funny, rude, racist. I mean, it's that kind of role.
He's
and,
a grumpy
plus. It's not Oscar. Yeah, exactly. He's a crotchety old fuck, and it's not Oscar worthy, but at the same time, it's Golden Globe worthy. You know, it's on that level. I just was kind of won over by
this
light
little
movie.
these movies to be big. Sometimes those movies are better if they're smaller and not, you know,
which is the case for
not
this,
awards winning things, you know. Yeah, sometimes they're, you savor them a little more sometimes when they're like that, you know. It's like a gym that not many people are probably going to talk about or notice St. Vincent because it's not going to get the acclaim, but it's certainly something that is worth watching, it sounds like.
I felt like if Billy Bob Thornton's character from Bad Santa had toned it down a little bit and walked out of that movie and into another one, it would have been this character. So, I mean, I kind of liked this movie a little bit more than I think I should. I laughed out loud, to be honest with you, a couple times. And it's a crowd pleaser. It's a moderate crowd pleaser. The kind we used to get in the early 90s is what I reminded me of.
Yes.
Talk to me about Automania. I've been wanting to watch this one. It's that Antonio Banderas futuristic feud. Automaton, thank you. Automania is something I do by myself.
Yeah, that's like an autofocus, right?
Yeah, it's abuse is what it is.
Automata. This is the Antonio Banderas story about robots, if you could not guess. The first half of this is really good, I thought. And it's very noir, in the future. Reminded me a cross kind of between Code 46 and Blade Runner. The second half sucks, so it falls apart, unfortunately. And it's a bit, what's the new robot one coming out from Blomkamp? Not Charlie, trippy.
Chappie.
It's a bit in line with that, but not as, you know, emotional as that. Where the robots, there's like these laws that they have set up, and the robots can't hurt people, whatever. But they can't fix themselves, and they can't create new robots. And they break that law, basically. They start repairing themselves, and he's, Tony Banderas plays this claims guy. He's an insurance guy for the company that makes the robots, and he, for whatever reason, is you know, turns into a cop and goes to investigate this shit. I never figured out why the hell he would do any of that. But, you know, corporate shit happens, and they, of course, turn on him, and the robots wind up capturing him and taking him across the desert to an ending that is boring and stupid.
It kind of sounds like Hardwire. Remember that? Hardware?
No, I mean, Hardware is weird. This is not weird.
This is pretty straightforward.
Hardware is good, I would say. This is not good.
Is it like Cherry 2000? Is he screwing the robots?
No. Yeah, it's not, and it's not even camp like that. It's ultra serious. I don't know, the noir stuff when he's doing the detective work. That to me was great movie. When it switched up and they took him and they dragged him across the desert. It was boring. You know, it became boring, and really, you knew at that point, you knew everything, and it was, you just waiting for it to kind of not even unravel, but just to play out, you know,
kind of took forever.
And it took forever. So it was badly. I would have redone the ending. I would have completely redone the ending if it was my movie. You know,
well, how was Banderas? I know you're a,
he's great.
You're an Antonio guy.
Yeah, I like him a lot. He was good in it. He had the wife in there for a second.
The ex-wife.
Are they ex now? Melanie Griffith?
Oh, yeah. Wow. He was running wild with the Expendables.
Uh-huh. The Expendables?
I think he got in trouble with the Expendables, yep.
I don't know. I don't care about people's personal lives. Unlike Jason, who apparently keeps up with all the tabloids. Yeah, like Antonio Banderas would be the tabloids. He'd be lucky.
He's trying to get the tabloids. He's sending them pictures. Hey, guys, look at me. I don't know why, but I just feel like Antonio Banderas acts like Puss in Boots in real life. He does.
He is that. That's in real life.
Yeah.
So that's my thing. I say, nah, don't waste your time on it. It was a good try by whoever made it, but ultimately it's just not worth it. Yeah.
Well, I asked you to watch a really peculiar film on Netflix, and everybody out there can check this out on Netflix as well, called The White Buffalo. And this is a peculiar Charles Bronson film that I felt, it was released in between Jaws and Orca and a lot of these kind of killer animal movies, but it's not, I didn't think Jaws-esque at all. I mean, this is kind of an acid trip Western is the only way I could describe it. What did you think of The White Buffalo?
Yeah, this is a horrible movie.
You thought it was horrible? Horrible?
I can't believe you made me. Yeah, it's bad, man. It just has no point. There literally is no point. It's fucking surreal. I feel like it's not actually. It's really not very surreal. You're lying, because I don't know. You missed the half the movie then. You know, a good three quarters of this movie is Wild Bill Hickok just walking around doing nothing.
Yeah, shutting whores,
Indians
shooting people.
Doing some shit. Yeah, which is not surreal at all. It's actually really bad. I mean, the gunfight in the fucking saloon? Oh, my God.
Huh. I thought it was so... It's real bad. It was so strangely put together. I told you, I couldn't decipher if
it's
I thought
badly
it was
put together.
Some sort of brilliant masterpiece or some sort of schlock, like, experiment.
It's real shit.
It was so
it
off the
feels,
wall.
It feels like what it other wants... Movie? To be about racism and, you know, like the end, like the white right, buffalo yeah. and he's going ape shit. He's kind of like Wild Bill Hickok, who's, you know, the last of his breed in a way. And he's kind of a white buffalo going ape shit, you know. He was the one that survived. And then he had a crazy horse, you know, kind of the last of his breed with the Indians and everything. And then the buffaloes being, you know, almost killed off. And here you have this weird buffalo, this white buffalo who somehow made it. But I think I'm giving them way too much credit when I come up with things like that.
No, I think that you pretty much that's the whole
the
point
racism
of the
movie, in
right?
this. Yeah, the racism is pretty apparent. I won't repeat some of the lines because I may be killed at this point. But
even the fact that the actors they had playing some of those roles are clearly
yeah, it was
Dances with Wolves.
So I don't
things,
know
so.
What I just don't know what this was trying to say. It was trying to say something, I hope, because it was, as you say, it was a bit off kilter. But
what are the movie going to get Wild
I just
Bill
this was,
and Crazy was Horse running around shooting at a mythical buffalo?
You're right. They were all three the last of their breed.
That's what I got.
They were the last one.
Yeah, they were the last of their days. They were all three going extinct. Because things
Jason,
were changing
here's
in the West.
Thing.
And
here's the thing about this fucking movie. You wait until maybe the last 10 minutes of this movie, and that's what you want to see. Actually, you don't need to see any of the rest of the movie, but like the
true.
Last 10, 15 minutes. I'm serious. I'm dead serious. Nothing else that happens has anything to do with shit.
Did you like the buffalo
it's
on the
bad.
Track a couple shots when you saw it being
the
shot out?
Buffalo looked
like,
pretty
on.
Good. If they had added some sort of movement, other than it like hopped like a bunny.
I saw it on a track, a big shot, like at a fast pace once or twice,
oh, yeah.
you know,
it hopped.
Like,
all
oh,
it did,
goodness.
It's the only motion it could do was front up, back up, you know, it just seesawed down. it's running. Look at it. But the detail of whoever actually made it, it's not bad. You know, it's not bad looking at it on like a still shot. It just had almost zero movement.
It had some movement issues there. A little tight in the movement area. Well, that's
Dino De Laurentiis. You should also say Dino De Laurentiis, right? I mean, that should say pretty much everything to everyone.
Right. Yeah. This is definitely from that era. Like I said, of Orca, King Kong, and stuff like
well,
that, where they were trying to
Dino
do
Dino De Laurentiis,
the killer Adam
with Charles Bronson. So,
yeah. Playing a syphilitic, almost blind.
Who I always think Charles Bronson never found that role.
Well, some would say Death Wish, but he just, I mean, that was.
Some would say Death Wish, but then I would say Death Wish 5, you know? I mean, no, not Death Wish, right? Death Wish didn't do shit for him, although he was really too old at that point. Although he worked up throughout the 90s and even, 90s. I think 99 was the last movie.
Yeah, but he was, you know, like you said, he was already in his 50s when he found Death Wish, so he never had a signature. Mm-hmm.
He just never got that role, but people liked him. Like, I like Charles Bronson.
I do as well.
Charles Bronson. Everyone seemed to like him. He just never got that role, and he's been in really great movies, but they've been, you know, cast movies. Like,
he's been in The Dirty Dozen. He's been in
The Dirty Dozen, right?
Stuff.
The Great Escape. He's been in a lot of things, but he wasn't starring in them. They were, I can't think of the word now, which would call
ensemble roles.
Ensemble cast. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so he had stuff like that, but he never, I don't know, he just never made, like Clint Eastwood, you know, he was kind of like the first Clint Eastwood, but he just didn't, Clint Eastwood, somehow became bigger.
I think Brosnan took a lot of the easy way out too, with working with Canon and taking projects that were very easily controlled.
Just
and
fell in with that crowd. Yeah.
So we both give thumbs down, or I guess we should say negative recommendations to Sin City 2. I say recommend St. Vincent. I also recommend Grumpy's Cat's Worst Christmas Ever, even though that is a TV movie, so take that with a grain of salt. Trevor says no recommendation unless you are a preteen for Earth to Echo, and he also didn't like Automania. I somewhat enjoyed The White Buffalo, although thank you, Automata. I got to tell you, Automania is what I'm doing right now while I'm on the phone with you.
I would watch that movie.
Automania might be Cherry 2000 sequel. And The White Buffalo, Trevor didn't like, and I begrudgingly agree with him, although I do think that there is some cult interest in this, or cult value, I should say. It isn't a
Cherry 2000?
Cherry 2000. Right,
and Cherry 2000 was Melanie Griffith.
That's a White Buffalo.
I just realized that. That's a good little tie in there for you. Good one.
I think that's what turned him on to getting this project going on. We want to take a quick break and get into Trailer Addict, and we'll get right on rolling.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yep.
Go to MovieMavericks.com for all your movie needs. It's pretty, like me.
MovieMavericks.com.
Can someone tell me what the hell a movie maverick is?
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
All right.
We do got some trailers. But you know what? I forgot to ask you a little question. Trailers. I forgot a little trivia question this week.
Oh, you got some trivia for us?
Holy Contrimo shit.
For is it going to be as hard as the last one?
It probably will be. I'm going to ask you because you're a. This is my question to you, but if you're out there listening, play along.
I'm not good at trivia, go ahead.
You're better than you give yourself credit for. I'll give you that. All right, we're talking about our boy Matty Damon today. Little Matty Damon. Ben Affleck's little brother.
I have no idea who you're talking about, but let's assume I do.
Matthew Damon? Known better as Jason Bourne.
Thank you, Matthew. It was the math that was throwing me. What's the middle initial on that?
That's P. That's P.
Is he
for you?
Is he? No, I can't say that joke. People might not get it. No, I will. Is he a fag?
Oh, wow.
Well, it's a Film Actors Guild.
I got it too because I've seen. I've seen World Police. A lot of people didn't. Okay, he threw me off on that one. So he's played a football player. One was rugby, and the other time he actually played a football player in his career. What movie did he play a star football player? Though it's not about football. And Ben Affleck, here's another hint. Ben Affleck's in this film with him, and Chris O'Donnell, and your boy Encino Man. All right, ponder that, and we'll get back to that at the end of the show. Save your answer to the end of the show,
friend. All right, fine.
We'll be there in a bit. Oof. Let's start off the Trailer Addict portion.
I can see the fucking picture of the poster.
You can. And if you IMDb this while I'm on the air with you, I will call bullshit on you. If you're out there IMDbing this, you're automatically lost. But if you got the answer.
It is.
Yeah, you do. I know you do. He's a little son bitch in that movie, too. We'll get back to that. First, set your mind on... let's talk about Star Wars, because everybody in the internet...
What? Star Wars?
9 million views in the first 24 hours for the Force Awakens teaser. This is an 88-second glimpse into J.J. Abrams' version of what is going on in the Force. What are your thoughts? We haven't talked about this at all. I'm curious. What do you think?
Well, I think that if this gets released in the 4D theater down here, I'm going to go see Star Wars in 4D because this looks fucking awesome.
I think this looks great, too. I'm glad you said that. I have no problem with anything in this trailer. There's a lot of bullshit.
The Black Stormtrooper? What did you think about the Black Stormtrooper?
Oh, the Black Stormtrooper or the there's a cross on the lightsaber. I don't give a shit about any of this stuff. It's a fucking
awesome
looking trailer.
Well, the lightsaber is stupid. I agree. But,
I don't
whatever.
I don't care about any of this shit. It's a Star Wars movie.
The lightsaber's stupid. I mean, it would not work, right?
It's an evolution, just like the last one had the two, you know, Darth Maul had the two.
Which is fine, but that would work. This one is hugely flawed in design, where it wouldn't work.
It might hurt your hand. It might be better if it pointed upwards.
Hurt your hand. It wouldn't even work at all. It wouldn't catch the other lightsaber. It would just cut right through it and kill and cut your hand off. It doesn't make sense. I agree with people who are making that. You know, you're going to spend whatever on Star Wars fucking 7. Let's not be making these mistakes. Okay, I agree.
This looks a lot better than anything Lucas cooked up or any of the teaser trailers that
doesn't look like anything, to be honest.
I don't know. I'm pretty excited.
I don't know what it's about. I will say
the best teaser trailer that this could be released for. I think this looks excellent.
Yeah, I'll agree with that, but it doesn't give you a clue as to what actually the fucking movie is. It's some choice shots. I know. So I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Great. It's great stuff.
You ready to watch this movie sight unseen 4 stars?
I'm fucking right I am. It's already at a 4-star. It's got to do some shit. I'm just happy there's not that much lens flare in a J.J. Abrams trailer or teaser.
Right. Yeah. I agree. I did like it. Like I'm saying, the Millennium Falcon stuff, I hope that the space battles in this actually you move that camera around and make me feel like I'm flying around and I'm on a ride. You know, that's all I want from a space movie like this. And nothing seems to really have done that. But that one fucking shot where the camera follows the Millennium Falcon and turns upside down and everything. Just like, oh, my God.
I even thought that it was a beautiful shot with the X-Wing.
That shot alone, that could have been the only shot in the trailer. It could have just been that shot, and I'd be like, yep, I'm going to go see that.
You had me at the Millennium Falcon. Thank you.
I'm like, this is all good.
Yeah, and I feel like we are reliving our childhoods because we also got a Jurassic World trailer this week, and this is a semi-successful trailer, in my opinion. I think it's put together well, and it does instill a certain curiosity, but my goodness, it feels awful familiar. I mean, is there any other story left to tell in this universe?
I like this. Did you like the trailer then? You're saying no?
I didn't really particularly care for the trailer.
No. I like the trailer quite a bit, and I really want to see this movie. Looks just like a Jurassic Park movie. Yeah,
I know. That's what I really liked about that was the beginning, like the little upgrades they did to the park with the monorail and things like that, and the gyrosphere.
I love that shit. But yeah,
I just thought once the running and the yelling and all that kind of shit started taking off, and although the trailer's put together nice with that really underscored piano riff and the John Williams
score. As long as
score.
It's not, and I don't think it's going to be like Jurassic Park 2. You know, as long as it's like 1 or 3, I'm good.
I agree.
I feel like this is very much a mixture and a mashing of the first one and the third one.
It does have a very self-referential feeling, you know, with people saying, you know, if you're running and screaming, they know.
Obviously, making fun of it a little bit. But what do you think about the raptors, the trained raptors? That was the one shot everyone was talking shit about.
I had no problem with any of that. Did you? I didn't.
Not really, no. I don't know. It's completely stupid. Yeah. I'll agree with anyone that wants to say that. Yeah, it's dumb.
Fine. Well, so is a big fucking alligator jumping out of the water.
I'm good at it.
White.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing's stupid.
I was like, I'm good at that point. You know, I'm still good. I just want to see dinosaurs attacking people on an island, and there really is no better way to do that than to make a Jurassic Park movie.
So I'm wholeheartedly after that Godzilla atrocity we had earlier this year. So
yeah, because you know what you're going to get with this, and it looks like they're going to deliver that. So yeah, I'm good. I think Jurassic World's going to be a big hit.
I think this trailer was just to me a little bit too familiar, but that's fine because I like the first.
I agree with you. It is, but isn't everything at this point? You know, that's been my issue with a lot of stuff. But I am a huge fan of Jurassic Park. So.
I the score is what got me on this. Like once they started that up, I thought, okay, now I'm back.
Which is interesting that they've got who is it? J.J. Abrams guy is doing the score on this.
Oh, Michael Gaccione. I didn't know Gaccione was doing this. I thought,
and of course, no, they got John Williams is doing the Star Wars movie.
He's
doing Star Wars 7. So which is J.J. Abrams, and then Jurassic World's got J.J. Abrams. It's interesting how these things are.
Resurfacing here.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Flowing between each other somehow.
Well, Lucasfilms is releasing its first fully animated film for children in Strange Magic. And although this has not been officially directed by George Lucas, it claims it sprang from his mind. It's based on a story from Lucas.
Yeah, from his mind during a masturbatory session.
During his automania.
This could have sprang from anyone's mind. This sprang from no one's mind. This is.
This doesn't look very clever. This
looks
like epic.
Shit.
Yeah,
it looks bad.
I think this is a very underwhelming trailer. It has some nice visuals in the design of the monsters, but
Strange Magic. Did I cut you off before you said the title?
Strange Magic. This doesn't look very good. It looks like pretty straightforward shit.
Well, like you said, epic, right? It looks like stuff that we've seen recently or in the recent past that has failed miserably. So it makes you wonder why the hell anyone would make the same thing again with the same bad jokes. It's just not good.
Yeah, the less said about this, the better. Let's move on. Cinderella, directed by Kenneth Branagh, is coming out, live-action version, next March. This has, goodness, I cannot think of her name right now, is the stepmother. Give me a help here. Who's the stepmom?
I don't know.
Oh, goodness. She's nominated constantly. My goodness, redheaded lady. She's flipping my mind. Well, I'm having an aneurysm on our show, so
redheaded
don't mind
lady.
Me. Nicole Kidman.
Kate Blanchett.
No. Thank you, that lady.
Was
good old Catherine Hepburn
in
the Aviator. She plays a stepmom. She was the evil stepmom.
I don't know these people's names. I'm looking at IMDb and it's like their names. Lady Tremaine? That's the stepmom? All right. Sure.
Sure. Is Lady Gaga in there too?
Yeah. All right.
This looks just like a Ever After mixed with the Snow White one. What was the one with Julia Roberts there? You know, it looks just like a mixture.
I don't think
two.
It looks like those. I think this looks more like Disney, what Disney's been doing with rebranding all of its old fairy tale stuff into live action things. With
it's
great
a beautiful
success
looking
with,
trailer.
Yeah, good success with stuff like Once Upon a Time, that the TV show. You know, they're really taking their mythology of the princesses. And
very
just
serious.
Banking on it like you wouldn't believe. Yeah, I mean, even Frozen, obviously Frozen, those princesses are now on Once Upon a Time. You know, they're really taking their whole Disney mythology and just working it. And this looks like something that I'm not necessarily too enthralled about. I don't know if you are. I really don't care about Cinderella. And the trailer kind of, I feel like I've seen it now and I know the story, so I can't imagine.
It is a very in-depth trailer.
New in here. Yeah. It really does give you all the moments that you're like, oh yes, yes. Okay. That's Cinderella. I'm done. But if I were a little girl or a woman, I'd probably want to see this.
You mean when you were a little girl?
Shut up.
We won't talk about that on air.
Right. Yeah. I could see people, you know. Of the opposite sex wanting to see this.
Yeah, I agree. This looks like for its intended demographic, very well done. And it looks like it has some nice cinematography and costume design and the whole nine.
Well, go ahead.
I just think that it looks a little, I'm glad it's not dark. You know, it's not the dark version of like Cinderella and in her evil stepmothers. And it's this like brooding kind of thing, but it looks a little too light and poppy at the same time. On the opposite spectrum.
But it is
so
something,
for real adult.
I mean, you feel like you get a lot of movies nowadays that are, you know, men orientated where a father can take his son to go see a movie. This is a movie, finally on the flip side, that a mother could take a daughter to go see.
Oh, 100%, yeah. And look at that line, you know, about be courageous and kind, you know. So that's the theme, I think, right there, the whole deal. Let's talk about The Captive. This is an Adam Egoyan film, a really underrated director, in my opinion. He's made some just very, very... What was the film we saw years ago with the school bus that went over
The Sweet Hereafter, which this reminds me of. This is essentially Gone Girl with Atom's kind of The Sweet Hereafter mixed in with it, is what it looks like to me.
I think this looks captivating. I really want to see this movie. This looks like something out of De Palma Heaven. I mean, this looks really even David Lynch-esque, you know, with the voyeurs and weird things going on. And I think this trailer is very strong. Ryan Reynolds plays a father who goes into a store, comes out, and his daughter's gone. The investigation leads to possibility that he may have done it. The wife is very against him. And then there's even some, I don't want to give too much away, even though the trailer does give a lot away. There is some strange voyeuristic things going on in this, and maybe that there's being watched. And it's, I think this is a very...
I've seen some TV spots as well that do a little bit more. They cast as kind of with Gone Girl. It does seem to like this is playing a lot off of that. And they do kind of cast Ryan Reynolds in a light in the TV spots of like maybe he's not such a good guy. So there's a lot going on in this movie that you don't realize. You think it's straightforward in this trailer anyways until you get to about the second half of the trailer and it gets, as you say, a little weird.
Yeah, but good weird. You know, I think that I didn't see that twist coming.
Well, if you haven't seen, and we're talking about The Sweet Hereafter. If you haven't seen that, seek it out. It's a bit hard to find. It's really good, especially in the sense of it's kind of an ensemble piece. But the way that he just winds everything together and tells the story of this small town is pretty amazing. I, as you say, really underrated director, but hasn't done much to land himself in the spotlight except for this, really.
At the same time, that movie came out, Sweet Hereafter, at the same time Donnie Darko did, and Darko got so much acclaim for really what I thought was a weaker film. And Sweet Hereafter, even though it's not the exact same thing, it is independent filming, and you get characters that you think a certain way about, and as things are revealed through backstory, totally changes your perception of what happened and how you feel. So, and I think, like I said, he's working in that same vein here, and you made that assessment too. So yeah, seek out The Sweet Hereafter, and the cap trailer looks great. Let's talk about Cake.
If you like Ian Holm.
Yeah.
Keep going.
This is Ian Holm, Jennifer The Sweet Hereafter is
awesome. Go.
It is. It really is. Cake is Jennifer Aniston's bid for an Oscar nomination. This looks like a very serious drama in the vein of The Good Girl and other things that she has done. Her glam down, if you will. Not too impressed with this trailer. What do you think? Is this like something up your alley?
Yeah. I would watch. I didn't think it was bad, but the problem with it, and one of the things that I have an issue with these movies sometimes is it's not enough that you're a person. Because one of the things I liked about Leaving Las Vegas was they really didn't allude a lot to his trauma and this and that. You know, he was fucked up and that was good enough. In this movie, and a lot of these movies, they go that extra step, right? Where now, so you're watching this, she's kind of fucked up. She has chronic pain. She's trying to deal with it. That alone should be enough, right? But no. She's got some deep, hidden trauma that has to come out, and oh my god, it's gonna like blow your mind when it does. And I don't know, that kind of high drama is a bit weak to me. It's selling like
Prince
point
of Tides.
That's
it's an
just
old
too much. Yeah,
it's an old drama.
I don't need that hook. I don't need that twist at the end. It's too much, I think, for me. I would rather not have that.
I felt so like the only thing trailer that was heavy-handed. I mean, the fact that the ghost is speaking with her.
But I agree with you, but that's what. I don't know, it kind of plays perfectly into what it's supposed to be, doesn't it? I mean, it is exactly what you'd expect from this type of movie, which I think in many ways is going to be its failing, and I don't think it's going to get all the accolades that they think it is.
It looks like it's very straightforward in the sense that you everything you expect from this kind of thing is
right.
What you're going
to exactly.
get.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Unfinished Business. This is the Red Band trailer for the Vince Vaughn comedy starring him and James Franco. This is about a group of businessmen who are they're doing their own thing, kind of independent salespeople, and they sign a big deal. They go to Germany to close it, and their rivals are there, so they have to woo the client. The Red Band trailer, I thought, was pretty damn funny. I think this looks like a nice return to form for Vaughn.
I have to admit.
I laughed a couple times.
I have to admit. You said James Franco. It's Dave Franco.
Dave Franco, I'm sorry.
The younger brother, who I think is fucking hysterical, just in everything. Just him in general is hysterical. I really like him for whatever reason. I can't put my finger on it, but I do. And he works in this. Everyone works in this, really. I think
trailer works.
Yeah, but it looks like a shitty movie. You know, that's the thing that I don't quite understand. Why can he not make... I think I'm going to like this movie. I'm going to watch it. I might enjoy it. Whatever my opinion doesn't matter, because I don't know that a lot of people are going to look at this and think, oh, that's, you know, worth it. That looks like a high con. It just looks shitty, doesn't it? It looks like it should be straight to video.
This does look like a huge step down in quality. The trailer does look funny. The trailer now for Pitch Perfect 2 does not look amusing at all. I didn't care for the first one. I know this has a big following. This thing...
What?
I was irritated in the first minute with this trailer.
No, and the first one I didn't like either.
I know we're not the demographic for this, but did you chuckle at all at this?
I understand why people liked the first one. You know, I could get it, and it's a movie that I see, and I've seen other movies that have done well similar to it. And you can tell when something's good, even if you don't like it. And that's, you know, that was Pitch Perfect for me. I didn't like it.
But you could tell it was good. Now, can you tell the second one's good by this shitty trailer?
Well, it's kind of like, you know, I'm not gay, but I can tell a hot guy.
Yeah, explain.
I don't know what I tell him, but
sounds like automania to me.
I can tell. I'm just saying. Yeah. So this one, I think this one looks good as well. I think this will make a lot of money, and I think that people will. It looks like it delivers on what people want for these, right?
I do not find Rebel Wilson funny at all.
Really? I do. I like her.
I know you do. I do not find her amusing in the least. Maybe that's my I like Anna Kendricks, who pops up in this, and in Cake, this in the show tonight. But
She's a star.
I do get what you're saying about why it's so pop, but it seemed like a Glee kind of, you know, knockoff.
Yeah, I mean, this one's even worse. Doesn't this one seem like all the dance stuff?
Show.
Like,
yes.
Oh, guess what? It's going to be a contest. It's like, yeah, no shit. What else are you going to do?
Exactly.
I mean, what else are you gonna do?
And starts off and there's like 15 chicks lying in bed together. I thought this might start getting good here, and then they just start all singing.
It's not the Red Band trailer. So.
It could have been a lot better. Let's talk about Pan, which is the Peter Pan reimagining. We talked about Cinderella earlier. We got Warner Brothers doing Pan. This has Hugh Jackman as Blackbeard, Garrett Hedlund playing Hook in a younger incarnation, not the Hook that we know. Fighting with Pan, but this time they've teamed up with a young Peter Pan to fight the evil Blackbeard. And some stunning visuals in this. Looks like a Harry Potter type film, and I thought they're really going for that angle here. And
it's
a fairly successful trailer in what they're trying to get across. I just don't know if there's a need for it.
I've seen this movie when it was called Hook, and it was pretty good. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I need to see it again.
It even looks like Stardust. I mean, with some of like the big ship flying and some of the stuff going on in there. But even the remake, I mean, there was one in 2003 that wasn't Hook. That was just, you know, the Peter Pan movie that came out. Mm-hmm. And it's just how many different versions of the Pan stuff do we need?
And at least Hook had a different twist on things.
Right, the grown up version and whatnot.
This feels, I don't know, like it doesn't. I guess it does. It feels like a prequel, but what are we setting up? A retelling of the movie again?
What's the point of the exercise, sir? Like that with this. I know. I agree. It feels like that with this. You know,
and it doesn't look bad. I just don't.
But tell me it doesn't look like a Harry Potter or something out of that universe.
No, it does. You're right. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's why he's so young in this, right? Well, it does feel like there's time to grow and become Peter Pan, ultimately, through
starts,
a series of films.
Peter, I expected him to go Potter. You know what I mean? It was like almost the same. I was like, here we go again. You know, where's Dumbledore?
You're doing it, Peter. You're doing it.
There you go, Governor. All right, well, the last film we're going to talk about on tonight's Mammoth Marathon Long Show is American Heist, and this is not the sequel to American Hustle or the sequel to American Me or the sequel to American Ninja.
Shame.
I agree. It was four of those, but, you know. American Heist is a heist movie. Can you believe that? Starring Adrian Brody. If it started Adam Brody, I wouldn't even talk about it. Adrian Brody and Hayden Christensen, along with singer, rapper, Akon, which is a hell of a distinction. But this movie...
And Jordana Brewster. How could you forget
Jordana
her?
Jordana Brewster as well as...
This is... Let me just sum this up for you. This is Fast and Furious 7.5.
Meets Takers 1.2.
Whatever. Meets whatever you want. This just doesn't look good.
I watched this and all I can think of the whole trailer, I mean, was thinking... poor Jordana Brewster deserves better than this. She is such a beautiful chick. I mean,
she deserves her.
She's a great actress. She was great in everything she did. I mean, she deserves to be in a better fucking movie.
I agree. She's good. I like her a lot, yeah.
That's the only thing I can think about.
Yeah, they clearly got her from Fast and Furious is the reason that I can think of. But this is just... I mean, with Hayden Christensen is holding Brody up against the wall, and they're like, fighting.
Yeah.
And then it cuts away, and it does all the shit, and then it cuts back, and Aiden Brody like headbutts him, and you're just like, why are we focused on a few shots in this trailer? And it just feels so amateurish, and I don't know, we're trying to create drama in this trailer that might not even really exist, or just exists in a few key scenes because you need some drama in the movie. It just looks bad.
It looked like something that might be up Dito Montiel's alley, you know, Empire State and A Guide to Recognizing the Saints. But even
well, it does
that,
look better. You have to admit, it looks better than Need for Speed, at least. It looks like it's okay, I'm not saying, I know.
But I think this is not going for that. I think this is going more for that Heat Takers, you know, Fast and Furious.
Which it doesn't
type,
even come close to.
Thing. Honestly, I think the whole getaway driving thing is just a very minute part of this, but they played it up for the fact that you got Jordana Brewster, people are going to make that.
But then
connection,
don't they steal something in this? They're stealing things as well. Obviously, it's a heist.
The Takers.
Probably. But they. At one point, they have chains off a car dragging someone. The whole thing reminds me of stunts, of better stunts from like the Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah, this is a very unsuccessful trailer. Actually, we do have one last trailer to talk about. It's Black Hat, the Michael Mann film. Yeah,
oh,
it was
that's
Chris
right. I forgot about
with the Sexiest Man Alive, Michael Mann.
Ooh.
Oh, no, he's not the Sexiest Man Alive. Who is it? It's Thor.
Ooh. I feel like Thor. Older men.
I'm feeling so Thor right now. Yeah, your boy there, Mr. Hemsworth, is fronting this movie about hackers taking over and crashing
Black Hat. Yeah.
The global economy. This looks okay, actually.
Really?
I saw it in a theater and I didn't care for this trailer, but I rewatched it. I saw a lot more Michael Mann in it than I had previously seen.
Oh, there's a shitload of Michael Mann in it, and that might actually be the problem. I'll tell you, this guy's not a hacker. He wants to be Tom Cruise,
he's a coder,
in
right?
Mission Impossible. He's not a coder. He's not shit. Have you seen the guy? Does he look like he's been living off of Doritos and Mountain Dew?
No,
he's not
he's
a goddamn hacker.
Handstand push-ups.
Yeah. Well, I'm a hacker. Let me sit down here and do this. And while they might as well have a scene where he's fighting off guys with one hand and coding with the other. You know, it's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, he's about the least likely hacker since Hugh Jackman took up the role in Swordfish.
I had high hopes for this movie being some sort of an espionage-esque type film. Instead, it looks like an action movie, and that's doesn't make sense. It's called Black Hat. It's not a fucking action movie. Should be some espionage type thing. You know, this is fine if you're going to do, like, cops. You know, okay, Michael Mann, do cops like that. If you're going to do, like, an assassin, this works as well. If you're going to do hackers, this doesn't work.
I have a problem with these movies because you really can't get into the whole hacking, you know, mindset, cult, whatever it is, in really a kind of mainstream film way. It just doesn't lend itself to that.
See, I disagree with that. I think that there's a lot of hacking stuff out there. I completely disagree. There's a lot of really interesting hacking things out there, but you need to present it in a correct way. You know, you can't. You know, think of like Boiler Room type dynamics and stuff. You know, that's you could do a hacking movie just like that. You know, if Scorsese ever did a hacking movie, or well, for instance, very well done. Right? David Fincher's already done The Social Network, which is very much a hacking movie. If you can build on that a little bit more, you know, it can be done.
Well, I think this looks, like you said, more successful in a Mission Impossible, Miami Vice type, high espionage, high global globetrotting.
Yeah, I thought this was going to be a movie about computers. It's not. It's
not.
Completely
silly. This looks like Body of Lies, even the Ridley Scott film with DiCaprio, and I was reminiscent of that when I was watching this.
Yeah, it's I think a little more silly than that. This is Michael Mann having fun, if you will, with and I just thought it was going to be more serious, I guess.
Yeah, well, I don't think this is an entirely bad trailer, but it's not as
successful.
I'll watch
it. It might be a good movie. I like Michael Mann, so.
Yeah, well, he's
might turn out to be good.
A lot of stuff. Yeah, it looks like it's shot very well, obviously. So, But then again, John Wick always does like a Michael Mann film, you know. So
it's got the boat in the water. You're gonna have the speed,
right? Yeah, it gets the night sky. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, that's going to wrap up our long but yet entertaining, we hope, show for this evening. We want to thank you guys for joining us on this episode 257. As always, you can go to moviemavericks.com, get the latest in reviews and our past podcasts.
Wait.
What?
What's the Matt Damon movie? Because I can see all their faces on the fucking cover.
I almost forgot to post that. I was going to actually post it on our Facebook page, but you are going to get me to say it on the air. The title of that film.
I can see the cover. I know you can. I'm going to tell you. The fucking DVD cover.
And you're going to let.
Because I've looked at it for years. I've looked at it.
Exactly.
I don't own this movie, but I have looked at it for years in the video store.
The title of the film where Matt Damon does play.
It's got something to do with. It's college things.
It is college football. School ties. Brendan Fraser is the lead actor. Chris O'Donnell, Matt Damon, and Ben Affleck are in that. That's one of Matt Damon's first starring roles. And he played a football player in that, and technically a football player in Invictus, where he's a rugby player. So,
well, football.
A footballer. Football. Right, Gov? This is a very Govness show. So that is our trivia for the day. If you do have a trivia question you want us to say on air, email us, hit us up on our Facebook page, and we will do that trivia on a future show. But like I said, you can go to Box Office Ace, play along with us in the prediction game, get our past podcasts at iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere else in the net that we're listed. Hundreds of crevices we can find us in. Know what I mean? And that'll
some
do it.
Some grumpy puss.
Exactly. There's a lot of grumpy puss running around. Speaking for my boy Trevor Anderson, I am Jason Rugard, and we, of course, are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, warp 9. Engage!